This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Folks, every Monday at this hour, we are the beneficiary of Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, joining us. We'll take your calls about PPP SBA, and he'll talk about those issues as well as a number of issues that are going on within the Beltway. Guy, welcome to the show.
No, thank you. Good to be with you.
So, Guy, over the past several weeks, we've been talking about deadlines. Some have been static. Some have been fluid. Any changes on any of those fronts first?
Most important, and we warned people about this, so our listeners were prepared. The PPP program has officially run out of money.
Okie dokie.
So, we knew it was coming.
So what does that actually mean?
What it means is if you have applied and your application has a hold code, they're still allocating money for that, presuming the hold codes will be resolved. The ones that were submitted to the SBA and are in the pipeline are also being processed. But if your loan was not submitted to the SBA, then you're unfortunately out of luck.
So has there been any further discussion of appropriating more money to that endeavor?
There has not. One of the interesting things is, as we look at D.C., the whole focus now is shifting to infrastructure, however that's defined, and then also dealing with the jobs report as well as the unemployment insurance. So there's been a total shift, and literally nobody is talking about increasing it. SBA is focusing on processing the shuttered venue grants and the restaurant grants. So I'm not optimistic at this point that PPP will get extended.
Yeah. So let's talk about shuttered venue for a second. Any status on that program?
No one has gotten any money, which is unfortunate. A couple thousand people have applied, so the applications are in. SBA is processing. It's a pretty opaque process. They're not reporting where they are, but they have not funded anything yet. Same thing on the restaurant grants. We have a significant number of restaurant grants that have been applied for. And, of course, you had that 21-day time period where you had to be in a special status to apply for the first 21 days, and then everyone can apply later. So over 200,000 people have applied for restaurant grants. Now, there is one thing, and if we have shuttered venue people on the phone, there is a number you can call, and I'm going to give that out. It's an 800 number, 659-2955, and that's an SBA number where you can ask, okay, how are things going? Which is sort of interesting because usually they don't offer an actual phone number, but that is a number that you can call and ask, you know, how things are being progressed.
Are you surprised? I thought the number for the restaurant program would actually be higher.
Well, remember the first 21 days, you can't apply unless you're in unless it's a woman-owned, veteran-owned, or disadvantaged business.
Okay.
So it's not open to the whole world yet. So you're right. I mean, this is only people in that group. it'll probably be three or four times that big when it's open to the whole world.
Yeah. And there is still concern that that program will probably run out of money as well, right?
Most people expect that it will, because there are so many restaurants, and so many of them had such a tough year last year that when you, and it's a true up bill where you subtract, you know, sales one year to sales another year, and you basically get the difference. So it's very likely to run out of money. And I just can't encourage people strongly enough to get ready. You know, by all means, get on the SBA website and apply as soon as you legally can.
Do you have a sense that people are starting to quantify all of the dollars spent at all of these programs? And, you know, Congress was out for a week or so, and they've come back and kind of, I sense a different tone now, almost as if they've recognized for the first time the enormity of the amount of money that they're actually putting out on the street.
Well, I think it's beginning to wake people up, and you have economists like Larry Summers, who's a Democratic economist, leans left, saying this is the worst economic policy we've had in 40 years. And he doesn't say it lightly, but his point is we're now at the point where we have more debt than we had at the end of World War II. And we continue to want to add more debt to that pile when the recovery is already going well. And if we'd simply step back and leave it alone, it would be okay. There's some real fear that we may be doing what's called help that hurts. And if not in the short run, in the long run. And the reason I say that is everyone in the world, including me, expected the jobs numbers to be over a million new jobs added. It was only a little above 200,000. And so all the economists and experts started digging in and saying, well, why did so few jobs get added? And they found there were four different reasons. One is, for some people, it pays more to stay home. And I mean, let's face it, if you're a young person and you're making money flipping hamburgers, you know that that hamburger flipping job will always be available. They're always hiring. And if I can play Fortnite in the basement for three more months and make more money than going to a job that I don't really like, that's not a tough decision for a teenager. Now, I would suggest that it's still better to be in the workplace. You'll gain some seniority and tenure and, you know, advance in the company. But, you know, telling a late teen or an early 20-something that, you know, that doesn't really resonate. So some people are staying home because of benefits. Another thing is childcare. If schools aren't open, and we don't have quite that problem in places like Jefferson Parish where the schools are mostly open, but in other areas without schools open, somebody has to take care of the kids, usually a mom, an aunt, a grandmother, sometimes a dad. So those workers aren't going to work. Then there is the fear. People, you know, watch the COVID news. Some people got obsessed with it and just got afraid, and they're afraid to go back to work. And, you know, you can't deal with irrational fear. It's some people are afraid of spiders. Some are afraid of lightning. And it's just, if you have that fear, it's hard to get over it. But the last one, Newell, is the one that concerns me, and the economists are digging into this, and this gets to your question. A lot of entrepreneurs are not kids. We always think of the 20-something in the basement, but a lot of entrepreneurs are retirees, are close to retirees, that have had a business they always wanted to start. And they're looking at paying higher personal taxes, higher corporate taxes, and then no ability to pass it on without estate taxes to their children. And they're saying, you know what, it's just not worth it. So we're seeing a decline in entrepreneurship in the older sector, which is, you know, fear of government intervention. So all those things conspire together. We don't know which one is responsible for the numbers, but all of them together mean we had fewer people hired than we expected.
And, you know, I think adding to this, a number of the most recent polls are saying that the majority of Americans believe that their taxes are too high. And, you know, all those, ironically, at the same time, 55% say they feel they consider what they pay to be fair, which kind of seems a little counterintuitive to me. You know, that on the one hand, they're too high, but they consider them to be fair. I'm not sure what to glean from that poll. You know, but it was a Gallup poll, so it was a legitimate poll. And it's interesting to see where Americans are falling on all of this. And I kind of tend to believe they're confused at the present time.
I think they are. And one thing, and for people that like economics, it's fun to look back. And if you look at the amount of taxes that the federal government takes out of the economy, the long-term average is about 19.5% of GDP. It doesn't matter if you're in the high-tax era before Ronald Reagan, you know, the Jimmy Carter era, the, you know, George Bush or Barack Obama. People tend to income their tax strategies so that the government gets about 19.5% of the GDP in terms of taxes, regardless if rates are high or low. But spending has been trending higher. You know, it usually was about 20% of GDP. Now it's pushing well into the high 20s. And people are a little bit nervous about that because they realize ultimately they're going to have to pay those taxes. You know, most people realize that corporations don't actually pay taxes. They pass them on to shareholders and customers. You know, it's not as if McDonald's has a magic pool of money and they're going to pay the taxes from it. They'll either reduce dividends, reduce the gain to the shareholders, or they're going to reduce or increase their prices. And so ultimately, the consumer pays the corporate tax. So there's no magic way to get tax money without us as taxpayers having to pay it. And most people are a bit nervous about paying higher taxes.
And, you know, a company like that can spread that cost amongst, you know, a lot of different products in a lot of different ways. And it's an increase that doesn't show up as much as other companies. They have more opportunity to spread that cost than a lot of other companies have, especially small businesses.
Well, yeah. And, you know, some of that spreading is a little bit invisible. My wife and I were cooking over the weekend and she said, you know, look at this. They're giving us smaller portions at the same price. And it's a product we've used pretty regularly. And son of a gun, the portions were smaller. The price remained the same. Well, effectively, they've increased the price.
Yeah.
So that's happening.
When we what's going on in the Beltway now and had on Michael Lambert, who's a federal policy analyst at the Americans for Prosperity in the first hour, it was interesting about infrastructure, and it seems as though this definition has moved quite a bit. And not to say that any of it's wrong, but I mean, you know, what's interesting about this, and he had a striking statistic that the $4 trillion that they're basically talking about when you add up these different programs for infrastructure equates to about $11,000 per person in the United States. And what struck me, you early on said we would be better off if we just gave everybody in the U.S. 10 grand and call it a day. And it seems like that 10 grand is now more like going to be about 21 grand that everybody would have received, you know, as you begin to pile up these numbers.
Well, and I think if the idea was to stimulate the economy, that actually worked. The economy was stimulated. The recovery is solid. We're seeing a couple of things that really tell us that. Rail car shipments are higher than they were before the crisis. So that's actually better. Retail sales are higher than they were before COVID. And the employment index, which is the employers, how easy or difficult it is to hire people, shows that it's more difficult to hire now than before the crisis. So we don't need to add more money to stimulate the economy. It's already stimulated. Now, are there some roads and bridges that need to be fixed? Yeah, there always are. And if we strip back to just doing that, I think that would make a whole lot of sense. And I think you'd get consensus on both sides that does make sense. We're already seeing some states going their own way. Montana and South Carolina said, you know, we just don't think the extended unemployment makes sense anymore. And so they're refusing it. They're saying we're not doing that because our folks are having a hard time hiring and we're just not going to keep doing the extra unemployment. So you see states going different directions, people getting a little nervous. I think everybody is afraid of inflation. You know, the only people who don't seem afraid are Janet Yellen and Chairman Powell at the Federal Reserve. The rest of us are thinking, man, prices are going up. No, I saw a picture that was – sorry, I have to share this. I saw a picture on the internet. Guy's pickup truck, and he's got 6 2x4s in the back. He says, I don't mean to flaunt my wealth, but I paid cash for these bad boys.
Yeah. In fact, I was talking to – you and I talked about this before. I was talking to a builder about 2 weeks ago, and he was quoting the prices of lumber – 2 years ago versus today, and I was in complete shock. The price differential of 1 10-foot 2x4, 1 10-foot 2x10, 1 10-foot 2x12. I mean, it was like,
oh,
what?
Yeah, yeah. Made the pickup truck so funny. You know, you got 6 2x4s. I'm flaunting my wealth.
And you know, the consideration is that he was saying that it may be cheaper to use steel now in some respects. And I never thought I would ever, you know, hear someone say that. It's not about supply. It's about process. And because the trees are there, there's no problem with that. It's just about the sawmills figuring out we got an opportunity to inflict some pain, and they did.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of a bottleneck in that some of the sawmills shut down and have not been able to reopen. But there's also a bit of a bottleneck in that people that are doing carbon offsets are paying lumber producers not to harvest the trees.
Yeah.
So yeah. Both things add up to higher prices. Plus demand is up, of course.
All right, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about what's going on inside of the Beltway right now. It seems as though the Senate parliamentarian may be the most powerful individual up there at the present time. We'll talk about that and other issues with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back. We're back. Let's go to the talk lines. We have a couple of callers for Guy Williams. Bernard, you're up. Welcome to the show. You're on with Guy Williams.
Hey, Newell. Mr. Williams, thank you for taking my call.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes,
sure.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. So, I heard Mr. Williams mention last week, and I'm a certified appraiser, and he's talking about it again, you and Newell, somewhat about the lumber issues. And there's a number of other issues out there that a lot of people aren't hearing about that we're finding, I know, in the appraisal industry. And one of the biggest things is a lot of these homes that are priced in the 265 to 400 range will get into bidding wars at some time, and they bid the price up just to get the house. But what we're finding is they're not appraising for what the house is being bid on for. And that causes a plethora of problems because many people are backing out of the deals. Most people, as you well know, will put a predication on it on appraisal. And some of the houses are falling $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 short. And you can't borrow more than the house is declared to be worth. So sales are starting to slow down a little bit because of that. And the other thing is, I think Newell mentioned it a little while ago, is that it seems that the lumber companies, at least in our field we're observing, is kind of doing this, I don't want this to sound the way it does, but on purpose, just to beef the price up so that when things slow down, the price doesn't come down that much. So that's kind of the stuff we're finding out here.
Go ahead, Guy.
Yeah, we're still seeing a lot of bidding wars on houses, and what we're seeing is people with substantial down payments, so the appraisal is not that critical. And as you know, as an appraiser, the number one indication is what a willing buyer and a willing seller will come together And so that does tend to push the appraisals up. They're well beyond cost sometimes. But we're still seeing bidding wars. That has to slow down at some point. You're absolutely right. We just haven't seen it yet. And on the lumber, we also didn't mention the spat we have with Canada, because they were a big source of lumber, and we're still having some tariff issues with them. I don't think there's one lumber supplier that has enough power to really keep the price up all by themselves. I think it's a combination of all these factors. The green people doing carbon offsets, the sawmills not being reopened yet, high demand for new construction, lack of imports, a bunch of things are coming together to push prices up. And it's not just lumber. I mean, a lot of other inputs into houses, like appliances, are going up as well. So I think we're beginning to see some real inflation in that area.
Yeah.
Right. On the appraisal issue, though, if the house appraises for $250 and the sale price is $300, well, most of the time you only borrow 80% LTV, right?
Depending on the type of loan.
Either way, they still have to go find another source of income to offset it if they want the house. Some people can do that, some people can't, and they let the sale go through. Either way, the issues we're talking about, something's got to be done, or something has to happen really soon, because it's going to – I know that lumber industry says they don't have a bubble going on, that they see this for long term, but something's going to happen sooner or later.
Well, you and I both know that we're not going to have forever and ever where houses are all selling above appraised value. That just doesn't last. I mean, it's a trend for now, but it will stop at some point. And, who knows when, but we're still in it right now.
I think it's going to be sooner rather than later, quite frankly. I can't imagine this economy stays heated like it is in this respect for a long period of time. Because, as you pointed out, Guy, there's just not that many people walking around with that much cash on hand to put down these healthy down payments.
Yeah, most home buyers buy the payment. They have to be able to finance the loan.
Right.
There's still some people with cash, and they're pushing prices up, but there aren't that many of those people.
Yeah, absolutely. Bernard, thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Eddie. Eddie, you're on the phone, on the line with Guy Williams.
Yeah, good morning or evening. I am a person who likes to save, but in small increments. I can't find a way to buy United States savings bonds anymore, since the banks don't make money on them.
There's a program that you can Google online. It's called Treasury Direct, where you can buy them directly from the U.S. Treasury.
Okay.
So I would take a look at that program, and it is a good idea to save regularly, regardless of whatever amount you're saving. It just is a good thing to do, so I'm glad to hear you're doing it.
A $25 bond doesn't cost you $25, and if you can't save $5 a week and buy one a month, you're really in bad shape.
Yeah, and look, that creates a little emergency savings for who knows what.
Because they earn interest until you cash them.
Yeah, my wife's father was a big believer in bonds, and he bought them regularly throughout his lifetime. It was just a good habit of thrift that he instilled in all of his children.
And it's amazing how fast that those small increments build up, Guy. I mean, before you know it, you're just doing it as a matter of course, and you stop, you pause, you look, and you say, "Wow, I didn't realize I'd purchase that many." If somebody gives you $100 as a gift and you take half of it and you go buy a savings bond and, treat yourself to something with the other half, and next thing you know, you got a whole bunch of these bonds.
Yeah, the other thing is, and I did this years ago, I started putting money in a savings account just from payroll deduction, and just set it up every time I got paid, a little went into savings, and then looked at the account. I said, son of a gun, look what happens over time.
Yeah.
So any sort of automatic incremental savings program, I would strongly recommend, whether you put it into an S&P index fund, a U.S. bond, or a savings account.
Yeah,
the key is to do it regularly.
Absolutely. Let's go to Dan. Dan, you're on with Guy Williams.
Hi, Guy. I'd like to make a comment, but I do have a question afterwards. The guy with the appraisal, I always thought appraisals were made by comparing what you're selling the house for, what other people in the neighborhood have sold houses for. In other words, if people are paying more to buy houses, the appraisal in that neighborhood would go up. But the way he was talking, it doesn't seem to be that way. They don't want to raise the appraisals just because the price of houses have gone up. That seems contradictory to me.
Well, there are three approaches to value that appraisers use. One is the comparable sale, and that's the predominant one, and that just goes up as sales go up. The other is cost to replace, and then the final is what you could make if you rented it. So they look at all those values. They rely mostly on the comparable sales, and as long as we're in this hot real estate market, the appraisals will go up, but it tends to lag the market by a little bit. So what he was saying is the appraisals haven't caught up with the high prices just yet.
Okay. My question is, though, I'm a landlord. When are they going to start paying us landlords for people that aren't paying their rent? Man, you know, I'm going to have a nice hunk of money if they keep going, but I'm going to be broke right now.
What parish are you in?
Jefferson.
Jefferson? Okay. Jefferson has a program. The five big parishes do. Jefferson has one directly where tenants can get money if they're having a problem paying their rent. So look at the Jefferson Housing website and get your tenants to get the rental assistance, because that has not been used up. Last year it was used up pretty quickly. This year they refunded more money. So your tenants should be able to get money to pay their rent.
Well, we applied months ago. I think I called you a while back, but they haven't started paying us yet. She applied and I signed all the papers, but nothing's happening.
Yeah, and that's where I would begin to talk, and I talk to my parish councilman and ask them to accelerate it. That problem is going on nationwide. Congress appropriated a ton of money for rental relief, and it has been very slow to go out. And it's a challenge because landlords have to pay their mortgage and their expenses. And, you know, the money is there. It should be going to you. And it really is a bit of just sort of a bureaucratic stuck-in-the-mud approach. But I'd begin to do some political pressure, because the Jefferson Housing Agency is a parish agency. And I was with the parish president a week ago. She is working hard to get her agencies and her department heads to do things more efficiently. But sometimes a little extra pressure helps.
Well, I called over there at the Jefferson place, and the lady said, well, we haven't made any payments to anybody yet. And I think that was last week.
Yeah, that didn't encourage you, did it?
Yeah, they haven't even started yet, but I'll call my councilman, too. That'll work. Thank you,
guys. Yeah, that just adds a little more pressure.
Absolutely, Dan. The squeaky wheel gets the oil for sure, so keep going after it. All right, we got to get to a break. We'll come back to the talk line. Chuck, you're up next. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We are visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, and we'll continue to take your calls, 504-260-1870. Chuck, you're on with Guy Williams.
Mr. Williams, kind of a theoretical question. So the U.S. government has just dumped, since COVID started, close to $10 trillion into the economy, and we're starting to see inflation pick up. Isn't this really going to be another redistribution of wealth, where the government's put all this money into the economy, prices are going up, and it's going to be spent on inflation? Wages aren't going up. So if wages aren't going up, then the other side is owners. Stock prices are going up. Isn't this just another redistribution of wealth in a massive scale?
Massive inflation or significant inflation, you have winners and losers. The winners are the people that own tangible assets. If you own rental property, if you own a house, if you own stocks and bonds, you tend to be a winner. If you are relying, and the big losers and the most unfortunate are senior citizens and people that are relying on fixed income. because their purchasing power goes down. The other winner, though, and this is what people forget, is the U.S. government, because tax rates are indexed. They're indexed for size. So as you make more money, even if that money doesn't buy as much stuff, you pay a higher tax rate. And one of the fears that people have is that with big deficits, the politicians, rather than wanting to cut spending or raise taxes, would rather just let inflation push all of us into higher tax brackets. So it's a complex equation, but they're definitely winners and losers. And there's a propensity in D.C. to like inflation because for them, it's a painless way to raise taxes.
Are we headed towards double-digit interest rates again?
I don't know about double-digit. You know, it's interesting, and I look, you can only tell how good a president is in retrospect. President Biden would like to be compared to FDR. Some people are comparing him to Jimmy Carter. And if the economy doesn't accelerate and recover with good productivity, we could end up with the worst of all worlds, with relatively stagnant job creation and higher inflation. So that's really the fear that people have, is if we spend too much money, you know, we'll be in trouble. One of the difficulties is we often compare it to World War II and say, well, at the end of World War II, we had about this much debt compared to GDP. But the problem is at the end of World War II, all the GIs came home. So you had a giant workforce of people. All of the GIs that had been fighting for 3 and 4 years wanted to get married, wanted to have children, wanted to buy houses, cars, etc. You had the biggest recovery in the history of the world, and the rest of the world was demolished, and we had to rebuild the whole rest of the world. None of those conditions are true right now. So comparing the debt level to World War II is one thing, but comparing the economic circumstances is another.
Yeah,
I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Amen. Me too.
Interesting observation, Chuck. Good question. It is a concern, though, is it not, Guy? I mean, you know, and then the one who would be next on that list of the losers would be W-2 employees.
Oh, yeah. No, you ask about Washington right now, and it's really, if you remember the movie The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, at the end of the movie, you had the three gunfighters, each at the apex of a triangle, facing each other. They all wanted the gold. Well, we have that right now. You have the left wing of the Democratic Party that wants everything, all of the Green New Deal, all of the taxes, all of the spending. You have the northeast wing of the party and the California wing that wants most of that, but they don't want the cap on state and local deductions. They want to remove that. Well, the left wing hates that idea because it helps the rich. You have the rest of the party that would like to have a true infrastructure package and sort of a medium tax increase. And in the meantime, you have the president and the Republicans sitting in the wagon watching the three gunslingers and wondering who's going to win. So it's a tough circumstance right now, a very, very divided Congress, and it makes it difficult. And now the pressure within the party is making it difficult to reach a consensus.
As a Democrat, who do you think wins?
I hope the mainstream party. I hope the Joe Biden of 20 years ago wins. I hope the economics. Do you remember Bill Clinton? My good friend Jim Comiskey and I used to have lunch once a month, and Jim always explained everything that was going on in the city. And he said, Bill Clinton's going to be one of the best presidents this century. He wasn't too far off. We had a balanced budget. Economy was booming. We weren't having fights with anybody. So pretty happy with him.
No, absolutely. All right, we got to get to a break. We'll be back. If we have time, we'll go back to the talk lines for a few more callers with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank of Trust. Stay with us.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.